All right. Well, we got 45 minutes, which doesn't seem very long, to talk about worship, and it's a Q&A. Just going to ask you, if you've got a question, if you could ask it as briefly as you can, because I need to repeat it in the microphone, because I don't think we're going to get the microphone. We're certainly not going to get it to the back. And also, as much as possible, if it can be questions that would be of general interest to everyone. Occasionally we get a question that is so specific to one, you know, like, I have a problem with my keyboard player, he's like this, and what do I, you know, and it's like, well, actually, let's chat about that after. So it can be as much as possible a benefit to everyone. Just to say, while you're thinking of your question, you will have noticed that for us, worship is at the heart of all that we want to do. And the reason is, just a little bit, just tiny bit of theology to start, not really theology, but we were created for relationship. And worship is the language of relationship. Worship is the language of heaven. And the greatest commandment is that we love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind and strength. And that's a commandment to worship. It's a commandment to worship with our, in our meetings, in events, but it's also a commandment to worship with our lives. Worship is bigger than singing. Worship includes singing, but it's more than singing. It's the whole of our life. And if we think we can just turn on worship and sing some songs for an hour on a Sunday and not live the rest of our lives as an act of worship, then what we do on a Sunday will become very dry very quickly. But what we've noticed is when we adore him, and it's basically praise, thanksgiving, adoration. When we come to him and we praise him, we give him thanks, we adore him. We don't do it for anything. We do it because we love him and because he's worth it. But what we find is we sense his presence more. And that's what's been happening this week. You know, we wouldn't have seen the ministry that we've seen if we hadn't worshipped as we'd worshipped. We really wouldn't. Psalm 22, verse 3, one translation of it is, the Lord inhabits the praises of his people. And when we praise him, when we worship him, he inhabits that. Now, one last little thing, just as to get it out the way. I wondered for ages why God, when I became a Christian, why did God want us to worship him so much? You know, why did he want us to tell him nice things all the time? You know, and I remember thinking, Lord, do you have an insecurity problem that you need us to make you feel better about yourself? You know, it would be like if I said, you know, to everyone, you know, right, now, those of you over here, I want you to praise me for my attributes, for my looks, for my charm, my personality. Those of you for all the things that I've done for you, you know, for my fashion sense, for things like that. And you in the middle, I just want you to adore me. If I said that, you'd be thinking, get out of here, and you'd leave, thinking the guy's got a screw loose. But I just, you know, said, but Lord, why do you want us to do that? You know, it'd be, I just imagined it was like the Lord saying, come my people, praise me, thank me, hallelujah me, tell me how wonderful I am. And I couldn't work out why he did it. And of course, I've realized that God doesn't have an insecurity problem. He's incredibly secure in his godness. He knows exactly who he is. And he doesn't need us to make him feel better about himself. And the best analogy, and then I'll shut up and we'll have the questions, is... some years ago, Tim Hughes, who used to work with me, worship leader, he got married to Rachel. And literally, it was about like 3 weeks after they came back from their honeymoon. It was very quickly after. We went to Melbourne, Australia to do a camp. And it was kind of in the middle of nowhere. And the kids were all in tents the other side. And we stayed in these huts, and it was basically one hut on the outside with a very thin partition between the two rooms. And I was in the one room, and Tim and Rachel newly back from their honeymoon, were in the other room. It was miles from anywhere. There was no noise. There was no TV. There was no radio. There was nothing to disturb the complete silence. And I was in the room next to them. And I'm telling you, it is amazing what you can hear late at night through a very thin wall, especially if you've got a glass up against the wall. And can you keep this to yourselves, please? Because this is very personal to them. But this is what I heard. I heard this. Oh, Rachel, Rachel, I love it when you flick your hair and it shimmers in the moonlight. Oh, Timmy, Timmy, when you play your guitar and you get passionate, it sends a shiver down my spine. Oh, Rachel, Rachel, your backing vocals are like the backing vocals of an angel. Oh, Timmy, Timmy, when you get passionate and your little dimples go in, oh, I love it. And it just went on and on and on. After a while, I thought, someone give me a gun, I'll shoot myself. You know, I thought, if that's what happens when you're married, thank goodness I stayed single. But what were they doing? What were they doing? They were praising each other. They were thanking each other. They were adoring each other. Now, I don't want to reduce what we do with God into human terms, but we are human. And so human terms sometimes are the easiest picture. You know, that's what worship is. You know, to love someone and not to tell them is like the most agonizing thing possible. So all worship is declaring who he is, telling him and declaring his majesty and telling him that we love him and why we love him. And we do that when we gather together, and then we express that in the whole of our lives when we live our lives in other ways. So that's just a quick background. Now, I'm sure the questions are going to be on what we do when we come together. So who's going to be first?
I was just wondering, is it wrong for a worship leader to listen to secular music?
Is it wrong for a worship leader to listen to secular music? I think worship leaders should only listen, if you're going to listen to secular music, Simon and Garfunkel, the Eagles, the Beach Boys. None of this modern rubbish. If you listen to that, it's rubbish. Does either of you want to?
No, I think I think it's important for us to be a part of the world and to listen to, you know, all kinds of music, really. I think be inspired and take from others. And, you know, for me, I listen to lots of pop music. For me, that's where I get lots of inspiration as well. But there's a ton of Christian music as well that's really inspiring, you know. You just look at for example, the new Hillsong United album, Wonder, I think it's called, and that's just full of so much inspiration and the kind of level of pop music and now Christian music is, like, in terms of quality, is really, really close. So I think you can get inspired by both, definitely.
We've said it, really. Next. If no one else has a question, I'm telling you, I will start preaching. So someone had better put their hand up quick.
Singing.
Or singing. No, I won't sing. I could do, couldn't I? Yes. You know what? If you have a question and you'd rather not have the microphone, just put your hand up and say, no microphone. I'll repeat it.
Do you have any tips for if you want to write songs, where do you start, and especially if you're writing with other people?
If you want to write songs, out of interest, how many of you, and I'm not saying if they're any good or if they're rubbish, how many of you have, even if you've never shown it to anyone, how many of you have written a song? How many of you haven't? So that's most have, which is wonderful. Who wants to start?
I think it's just different for everyone. I know for, like,
for me, I started playing piano when I was a little kid, and so before I even knew Jesus, I'd make up little songs. And so when I became a Christian, that translated in that way, kind of self-taught myself guitar. And so sometimes, you know, people are, like my husband might write a song he might be inspired by. He sort of starts like playing something and comes up with, you know, random chord progression that he feels is good, and then he might add melody and lyrics after that. Whereas for me, I'm often literally lying in bed at night, at midnight, and I start getting lyrics in my mind, you know, just from something that God's doing in my life or whatever. And I start typing them out. Sometimes I'm in worship, like it's on my phone. So for me, sometimes, you know, lyrics are the first thing to come, and then I add the music later. I don't know when it comes to, like, if you can't play an instrument, I don't, I know my daughter grabs her iPad and just, like, sings something. So you could still just, like, record the ideas if you have, like, an iPhone or an iPad, just melodies. But you probably have to, yeah, try and connect with someone that is a musician to kind of help you work that out more. Tom, do you want to talk about co-writing? Ultimately, it's just different. I don't know if you want to share a bit of...
No, I guess it's, like... any melody, lyric or anything, get it down, record it, write it down in a book. Everyone's got a little recorder on your phone these days. Just record everything. And even if it feels like jargon or rubbish to start with, that's what I do. And I guess, like, for me, most of... I'll kind of just get melodies and lyrics in times of worship. And so... because I think there's this thing Matt Redman said, I think, if it starts in worship, it will... do you know what the rest of that is? If it starts in worship, it will end in worship, lead to worship, something like that. There you go, true wisdom.
What was it he said?
If it starts in worship, it will be worship. Don't quote me on that. It's something like that, but... I'm sorry. Never mind that. No, shut up. So yeah, if it starts in worship, I think that's an amazing place, because it's like you're in the presence of God, and so that's where a lot of time I'll get a lot of lyrics and lines. Like even the other week, like you were speaking on obedience, and just during Mike's talk, I just got this little thing to sing out about trusting God and being obedient in God, and straight away you came up to me, didn't you? Were like, get your phone out now, record that. and it's just, I think, it's different for everyone. And but for me, you know, I'll try and get to the song to a point where I feel like I can't do any more on it. And that's where I think you need help and you need people around you. So then I'll take the song to someone who I trust, and depending on what kind of song it is, take it to that person as well. So if... and I think co-writing is really important, because it's understanding as well that you can only do so much, and sometimes you do need a bit of help, and laying down those songs and allowing someone else to come in and help you almost helps you finish them and helps it be a better song as well. So I think, you know, choose wisely as well who you take those songs to, people you trust, people who are for you, and I think that's really important as well.
Great. Who else? All right. You, and then you, and then you.
So, like, why use music in particular? Is there something more spiritual about it, rather than like visual art or theatre or something like that, kind of as an expressive form?
Yeah. Can I just say something on that? I think all art is, and not just art. I'm not into art, you know. Why do we have to worship through art of any form, you know, visual, expressive, you know, why, you know? So it needs to be wider. I think the thing about singing is it's universal. You know, only a few people can paint, you know, in a way that's like, wow. Only a few people can do a pottery piece that is like, and we want that. That's wonderful. But music is music's the language of love in humanity, in a way that other things aren't. So music's the one thing that brings us all together. You know, I've been places where during the worship someone's painting, but that's one person painting or two people painting, and then other people are looking. And what we want to say is worship is participatory. It's not audience. Does that? I think that's why we would say, but we wouldn't say it only needs to be through music.
Do you ever find yourself disagreeing with particular lyrics in some common worship music, and what do you do about that?
Well, I was going to make a joke about one of his songs, but I can't be bothered. the question was, do you ever find that you disagree with some lyrics that you're singing? And if so, what do you do about it? Good question. Two things that spring to mind is, and this is debatable, you know, there's the song from, I think it's Bethel. I really love it. I can't remember the song. The other one first. Yeah, the Sloppy Wet Kiss. He loves us. Oh, how he loves us. Well, when it first came out, it came out as, and you give us something like your sloppy wet kiss. And I remember thinking, I'm into intimacy and I'm into getting close. But, you know, just the thought of, I wasn't connecting in that way. And that didn't mean it was wrong, but I just noticed, it was a stumbling block for quite a few folk, particularly blokes who were like, sloppy wet kiss from, you know, it just didn't work. And then we discovered that Chris Tomlin, who loved the song, just, and I think he did it with permission, he just changed it to Unforeseen Kiss. And for us, we thought, you know what? That doesn't exclude anyone. That doesn't make anyone feel unnecessarily uncomfortable. So that's fine. We really try and make sure. It's the pastor's job. It's to make sure the lyrics are biblical. So that, you know, if anyone in my team writes a song, or if we're going to sing a song, my one job is to try and make sure, you know, we're not singing something that's not biblical. I had a question, Tom reminded me, when What a Beautiful Name It Is came out. I loved the song, but there was this one line, you didn't want heaven without us. So whatever it was that he did, he came down. So you sent heaven down. And I was like, I said to Tom, I'm not sure about that, mate. You didn't want heaven without us. It sounded to me like, oh, you're incomplete without us. Well, he had heaven without us for eternity before we turned up, and he didn't create us in order to, you know, in order to complete him. He is, you know, the doctrine is, he is all sufficient in himself. And then I thought, but you know what? That song came from Hillsong, wasn't it? And I know they've got this guy at Hillsong Sydney who's called Ferguson. Can't remember his first name. Robert Ferguson, who's a real theologian. And their songs improved when he started going through them and checking them. And I was thinking, why did he let that one go through? And then Tom said, I don't think, you know, he was saying, I think it's all right. So I phoned Tim Hughes and I said, what do you think, mate? I don't know about you didn't want heaven without us. And he said, no, you're taking it the wrong way, I think. The way I've always taken it was, you just want us with you in heaven. You don't want us away from you. And as soon as he said that, it was like, oh, yeah, okay. I think if there's a lyric that you strongly disagree with, then don't sing the song, because it's important we sing truth. But hopefully these days, a lot of the songs, I've had one or two. I tease Tom about his song Dynamite. And I say, you know, Tom, just sing songs about people blowing themselves up. You know, and I say, are we going to have your blowing yourself up song, Tom? If I thought there was a problem with that song, I'd say we shouldn't use it. And I've heard one or two folks saying, but it doesn't mention Jesus anywhere. It doesn't say anything about Jesus. And the thing is, for me, we sing that song in the middle of every other song talks about Jesus. And if you look at the lyrics, who else is it talking about for us as Christians? Who else is it talking about? And we're celebrating Jesus. And again, we don't have to have
Jesus in every other line for it to be a valid Christian song. So if all the songs were, you know, none of them did, that would be different. But I think it's a great, I mean, you see, it's a great song of celebration. And in the context, it's obvious who it's to.
So my home church, we have sort of a balance between youth and elderly people. And we were just wondering how you get that balance with the old songs and bringing new songs in the church.
Great question. And that's a great question with an obvious and simple answer. And the answer is absolutely clear. To any idiot should be able to say that. Tom.
I think it's very important, I think, to meet people where they're at. So I think I've learned this the hard way, where I remember going to Soul Survivor when I was in my teens and recording all the songs on my phone so that I could lead them at church on Sunday, and then my church would just be standing there like clueless, you know, all these youth songs, and then suddenly, you know, all the older people will be like, what the heck is this? And so I think it's really important to meet people where they're at. I think, you know, if there's a lot of older people in your church, then, you know, I think, you know, it's great to include a couple of hymns, you know, in that kind of environment. But also I think there's nothing wrong with trying to introduce new stuff. It's just how you do it. And I think if you want to go further, you know, you got to just take baby steps and just go that little bit slower. And so I think, you know, sneak in one new song or something and check it by your pastor, and I think that way, you know, our kind of way that we would do that is by playing that same song maybe 3 times in each week over 3 weeks, and then have a break, 1 week off, and then bring it back, have a break, and then bring it back. So it's kind of like 6 weeks in total. But I think, yeah, the important thing is just meeting people where they're at. You know, you look at church, it starts, and especially at our church, 10:30, probably half the room is empty still, and people are still coming in, families coming in. So you got to bear all that in mind as well. You know, there might be people having an argument in the car on the way. So it's like, how are we going to lead them into worship as well? And I think meeting people where they're at is really important. And you know, even if that means just doing kind of songs that are well known and songs that are about, I think you can't go wrong when the song's about Jesus. And yeah, I hope that helps answer a little bit.
I think what can really help, and Mike does this a lot, just talks about like worship. It's, you know, it is participatory. Is that the word? Sorry, terrible. It's not entertainment, you know. And I think one thing that's hard when you're a worship leader is when you sort of feel like you're like worship jukebox, where everybody wants you to sing their like favorite hits. And, you know, I mean, there can just be a pressure, especially if you have like people that like one type of song, you know, youth, and then, you know, maybe more mature, or, you know, elderly that like a different type of song, and they're all in the same room, and you're trying to, you want to be pastoral and have everyone engage as much as possible, but then you can't please everyone, and ultimately it's not about us anyway. So one thing that I think is really helpful is having a church leader or a pastor that can even, you know, not with doing some big sermon, but can, you know, talk about that and just in little ways teach and remind the church that worship is about God, and, you know, just encouraging us to engage. And, you know, I think that the youth, we need, you know, I'm not youth anymore. I don't know why I said we, I'm old. But youth, you know, just being gracious towards the older people, and just wanting to serve and play songs that might not be their favourites. And then the older people having a heart for youth, and, you know, jumping in and learning songs that they know will the youth will connect with. So I kind of feel like it's working together, but it definitely helps when you have leadership that sort of reinforces that, you know, it's not a, you know, I'm here to get my, you know, my favourite songs, and if I don't get the songs I want, then I'm not happy and I won't engage or something like that.
Is that okay? Yeah. Another question. Yes, mate.
You were talking about worshipping with your life. How would you do that?
Good question. You talk about worshipping with your life. How would you do that? I think it's about living for Jesus. they I'll get a tiny bit technical here quickly. That in the Hebrew, in the Old Testament, there were two main words for worship, and the one word literally means to bow before, and the other word is to work, means to work. And the second word for worship involved, you know, you worship in the way you treat your family. You know, if I treat my family well, I do it for Jesus. And for the Hebrews, they didn't split between sacred and secular. It wasn't, this is my religious time. You know, when they collected the harvest, they celebrated as they collected the harvest, because they saw that as part of the life that God had given them. Now, it's interesting, those two Hebrew words in the what's called the Septuagint, which is the Greek version of the Old Testament, and in the New Testament, which was written in Greek, the first word, the word that's translated to bow down, the Greek word is proskuneo, which literally means to come towards, to kiss. And it speaks of that. And it was used in the first century in the secular world to speak of a hound licking its master's hand. And that word is used in the New Testament 66 times, far more than any other word for worship. So with the coming of Jesus, what we see is there's meant to be greater intimacy. Can you imagine it? The word that was used to speak of a dog licking its master's hand is the word they used more than any other to describe worship in the New Testament. The other word that's used, and it's used three or four times, is the Greek word latreo, which means to serve, and it's used in Romans 12, verse 1. In view of God's mercies, present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God, which is your spiritual act of, some translations have worship, others service. And that speaks of worshipping by serving. So the greatest commandment is that you love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. The second commandment, says Jesus, is like the first one. And in the Greek, the like means of the same order. It's the same as the first one. Love your neighbor as yourself. So if singing is to him is worship, loving your brother and sister when you're not at church is also worship, because that's the same order. It's like the first commandment. And so, and there are some Christians who say, oh no, worship's is what we do when we sing, when we come together. There are others that say, no, we shouldn't call that worship. Worship's what we do when we feed the hungry. And you know, Paul says, you know, I was hungry and you, not Paul, Jesus says, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. When you did it to the least of my brethren, you did it to me. So that was worship. The thing is, it's not one or the other, it's both. It has to be both. And if you just try and worship when you come singing in church, it becomes self-indulgence. If you just try and worship by living the life, but you never adore, then that becomes dry and arid and legalistic. It's both. So it's worshiping in the whole of your life to see that. You know, the way I treat the waiter at the restaurant when I'm in the hungry from food, the way I treat the checkout assistant at Sainsbury's, you know, the way I treat my family, I should be doing it for Jesus. So I should be doing it as an act of worship. I love you, so I'm going to live for you. And this is my worship as well as that. Yeah? How would you recommend starting to be involved in leading worship? If that's not been happening, how would you start?
I think, are you a musician already, or you are? Great. I think first thing to do is just, ask your worship pastor or pastor, whoever's leading the worship team, just say, hey, I'd love to grab a coffee with you or something. If there's anything I can serve or help with, any areas, then, I'd love to get involved and just learn. I think that's a great way of just, introducing yourself and letting them know that you're interested in joining and learning. I think then, they might kind of see, hey, why don't you jump into this? Why don't you come along to this worship event with me or something like that? Or come and be a part of the band on a Sunday or in a youth group. I know for me, I started in a youth group and that was, you know, looking back on it now, that was a great training ground for me because it was, you know, permission to fail and to muck up whenever musically and, you know, and still have a youth leader who was for me and would encourage me and say, well done, keep going, you know. I think just those small environments are really, really precious to learn in. I think, you know, if you're part of a connect group as well, say, hey, I'd love to help with the worship sometime. Anything I can do to help, let me know. And, you know, they might say, hey, yeah, you know, come and lead a bit or something like that. But I think as well, you know, there's so many training things at the moment, conferences that, you know, I think it's good to go to and learn from as well. So, yeah, but first thing to do, I think, is just make contact with your worship pastor, start a relationship with them and then see what happens.
And, you know, one of the things that before I even thought that I could be a worship leader, I just loved worship. And so, and back in the day, the resources now are so amazing. You can go online and like print off any chord chart in any key. I mean, it's so helpful. Back in the day, I was like transposing stuff and typing everything up in girl keys and everything. It was exhausting, but I loved it so much. And so I would just worship all the time on my own and be learning songs just because I loved it. And again, I never thought I'd have the opportunity. And then I got asked to, I don't know how they found out, but I got asked to just lead in a small group. And I did that for 2 years before I ever even co-led at church. And I just wanted to encourage you guys, like with the, I know you sort of maybe see people on the stage and it sort of feels like, oh, that's where I, you know, want to be eventually. Or even if it's just out of, you know, you really love worship and you want to grow as a leader. But just really embrace those small things because, I mean, I sort of, it was kind of like wax on, wax off, you know, where like suddenly at the end of the 2 years, I realized, oh my gosh, I know all these songs. And I mean, I certainly wasn't like, you know, a pro or anything, but I realized I had this backlog of songs and I'd learned how to lead. And it just really helped me to prepare. I'm so grateful for that season. Yeah, helped me to prepare for when I actually got going at church.
And I think that is the other key. You know, worship on your own. Matt Redman was in my youth group from when he was 13. And you know what? I realized that he was a worship leader when I went to his home. And before he knew I was there, I could hear him in his room bashing his guitar, singing songs to Jesus. And then I remember I took them all to a camp and I walked past his tent. And I could hear him inside his tent. I just stopped and listened, just worshiping Jesus. And, you know, just, you know, be a worshiper and then God opens the door to lead others. And the way you spot a worship leader is if they worship at the back, they'll worship at the front. If they can't worship at the back, giving them a guitar or a keyboard isn't going to make them a worship leader. It'll just make them a song leader. So keep going with it as well. Yeah. Talking about the peace that Jesus gives and how we get that peace. It's a great question. It's not quite on the subject of worship. We'll try and answer it. What's our experience of the peace that Jesus brings and how do you get that peace? Yeah, I think peace is a fruit of the Spirit. And the fruit of the Spirit is the life of Jesus. It's just getting close to Jesus. Peace isn't something, this disembodied thing that comes to us. Peace is Jesus. He's called the Prince of Peace. And the more of Jesus you have, the more love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, something and self-control. What's the other one? Faithfulness. Thank you. And that was embarrassing. And self-control, well done. You get because it's not the fruits of the Spirit, it's the fruit of the Spirit. It's one fruit, nine flavors. And one of the flavors of the life of Jesus is peace. And I think people are looking for peace over here. And if I do that, and if I meditate here, or in disembodied forms, it's Jesus. The closer you get to Jesus, the more you have him reigning in your life,
the more your life is at peace. I know that's a simplistic answer, but I don't know that I know a better one. What does God do to you or for you when you worship? Does he give you anything?
Not all the time, but for some reason, I really do feel God's presence a lot in worship. So I don't know if that's because I'm a feeler just in general. But I respond. I don't know if this is even helpful, but I do respond. Like, I just cry all the time. I don't know. I'm not emotional. I might go into a time of worship or be on my own feeling like no emotion at all, like just feeling totally fine. And then, you know, just experiencing his love or, you know, and having my love for him pour out. Like sometimes it just makes me cry. So I don't know if anyone else experiences that. But so it's not really anything like God's doing to me, but it's just maybe my response to him. But I definitely like feeling his presence or his closeness. I experience that a lot in worship.
And I'm not sure it's so much what he does to you. It's what if I want to get close to someone, what I'll do is I'll talk to them and I'll listen to them. So if you want to get close to God, talk to him and listen to him, you know, through his word, through the Bible. But also with God, if I want to get close to him, you know, I want to, as part of my talking to him, it's not just asking him questions, but it's, wow, you're fantastic. Because we're not just friends, we're the ones who love him. We're the ones who love him. And when you do that, you put yourself in a place, you know, God's showers of blessing are falling on us all the time. When we worship, what I feel is we take the umbrella down so we can get a bit wet with his showers of blessing. And it's the same with prayer. It's the same with reading the Bible. It's the same with doing what he says. It's what we do to put ourselves in the place where we can receive his blessing, I think. One more question. What the worship side of Soul 61 involves. I think I know who's going to answer that one.
So one of the streams for the Soul 61 course is the worship stream. So 2 days of the week, you'll be with a team of us at the church, and we go through loads of things. So we'll take it in turns where we share a little bit about our experiences of worship. You'll also be doing lots of songwriting. So we have a few people come in and do songwriting classes with everyone. We do band dynamics and band master classes where we teach you how to play guitar, piano, drums, whatever you play. But really, it's the whole, you know. And the other 2 days you'll be doing in the teaching sessions with everyone, the whole group as well. So you get a massive range of everything going on. But yeah, you know, it's just about, we want to try and help you and your gifting and your calling, whether you're a worship leader or a musician. Those times are just kind of spent, yeah, songwriting, learning, listening. So a lot of time we'll send you out to go and listen as well, and read books and reflect on them as well. So, and a lot of creative time as well. So, but yeah, we can chat more about it if you want to know a bit more in depth and stuff.
And also, as a church, worship's our very high priority. So it's not a promise, okay, because we don't want people to come so that they get, you know, we say to everyone who comes on Soul 61, our aim is not to give you a platform to put you on a stage. Our aim is at the end of 10 months, you love Jesus more. If at the end of 10 months you love Jesus more, we've done what we needed to. Having said that, you know, I mean, everyone so far who's come on our worship stream has been used in leading worship, in playing in the worship band. You know, some of them, in fact, Sam, who was on our Soul 61 last year, he's not playing here, but he played at Naturally Supernatural Keyboard and Soul Survivor A, and Soul Survivor A, and is very much, and now travels with us and stuff like that.
So we want to give experience, and whether it's in small groups or in bigger groups. But the main thing is, you know, to get closer to Jesus makes you a better worship leader. There's also, like, Andriana does vocal training. What do you call it? Yeah, vocal training. And as well as other stuff. So it's a mixture. As well as that, you get to sit in on the other teaching for everyone, which involves some theology. And you know what? If you want to be a songwriter, it's really good. It's really good to get some theology down you. It's really good to know the word. And there's theology, there's other things, there's practical stuff on leadership, on other things. So there's a whole load of stuff, but also output as well. All right. I think, let me just check. It's 16 minutes past. So this needs to turn back into a cafe again. Guys, 45 minutes is not very long. I hope some of this has been helpful. See you later on.